This is an iHeart podcast.
Pete Hegseth lit the military on fire today. We have a bunch of stuff about that. We're going to talk about this Pfizer deal. Senator Ron Johnson is here. Julio Rosas, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, so what everybody's talking about today is the speech Pete Hegseth gave to all the military top brass. And everyone knew something was going to happen. He put out the word that generals and admirals, all these big shots, all the military leadership, you guys all have to come to Washington, D.C., all of you, physically. Now, that's a huge deal, a gigantic deal. It's not like you or me getting online and booking a Southwest Airlines ticket to fly an hour. These people are all around the planet. And they all come with gigantic entourages, staffers, drivers, all kinds of things. And it was not optional. All of you, come on. We're going to have a little chat. Now, before we get to the actual chat, I need to explain some stuff you already know, some stuff you may not realize about why the military has rotted as much as it has rotted. But what happens? So we're going to talk about communists in power first. When you drive through your town, we're just going to make this about your town. When you drive through your town and you see a school, what do you think should be done at that school? Educate children. When you keep driving down the road and you see the public library, what should be done at that public library? Well, they're all about books. They should be giving out books, loaning out books to people. Okay. You drive to the hospital. What should be done there? Well, caring for sick people. On and on and on and on and on it goes. You believe every single institution should do the purpose of the institution. Almost sounds like a simple point, right? But it's really important to understand that that's not how the communist sees anything, anything at all. The communist drives down the road and the communist looks over at the school and the communist thinks, how can I use that for my revolution? I need to get in there. There are kids in there. What if I could teach them about the revolution? The communist keeps driving down the road and he sees the public library and he says, there are a lot of kids who go there, adults too. They're picking up books. They're learning things. You know what? We need to get a big tranny display in there. Make sure we really drive that point home. The communist drives further up the road and he sees the hospital. Everything he sees is an opportunity for power and to use that power for the revolution. Which brings us to the United States military. This applies across the government, but we're just going to make it about the military. When you think about the military, in any way, maybe you served, maybe you didn't, maybe you have a relative, but even if you didn't, none of that matters at all. When you think about the United States military, what do you think? What should they be doing? Well, training. Training so they can fight for America, defend America. Training so they can defeat our enemies. That's a basic point. That's the point of the military. But you really, really, you have to understand this. That's not how the communist sees the military at all. Defending America, fighting for America. These thoughts never even enter his mind. The communist doesn't think in those terms at all. He's fighting a completely different war, a completely different revolution. For him, the military presents an incredible opportunity. An opportunity for what? Well, we live in a country, by the grace of God, where the military does not rule. We're not run by a general, an admiral. The military, our military, serves underneath our civilian government. You, me, we get to pick the government, and then the government tells the military, you go here, you do this, you don't do that. That's a good system. That's the kind of system we want. But it also is a system that presents an opportunity for the communist. If he can conquer the government, then that huge military, all those people, all those guns, all those bombs, all those tanks, all that money, well, that can all be used for the revolution, all of it, every single part of it. And so many people on the right in recent years, as we've watched the military get gayer and lamer and gayer and lamer, and we had to stuff women here and DEI this and trannies here, and normal people like you, like me, have been mortified. And it's a common way of thinking for normal people to say, Why are they doing this? They're destroying the military. No, they're destroying what you think the military should do. They're destroying what I think the military should do. That's not what they think the military should do at all. They have a gigantic toy to play with. They can use it for the revolution. And so they have done everything they can do to that end, which is why this Trump term is so critically important, because our military in recent years has reached critical mass for communism. At our military academies, you can take courses on diversity. We have so much gay, rainbow, drag queen ugliness there, open anti-white racism. It has turned into Berkeley, a disaster, and it needs a lot of work. By the grace of God, our Defense Secretary, Pete Hegseth, has spoken endlessly about this long before he was Defense Secretary. He wrote a book about this. People who have fought for this country who know it is a big, big problem. So Pete Hegseth called all those generals, all those admirals, many of whom are responsible for the condition of our military, and they had a little chat today.
From this moment forward, the only mission of the newly restored Department of War is this: war fighting, preparing for war, and preparing to win, unrelenting and uncompromising in that pursuit. Not because we want war, no one here wants war, but it's because we love peace. We love peace for our fellow citizens. They deserve peace, and they rightfully expect us to deliver it. Our number one job, of course, is to be strong so that we can prevent war in the first place. The president talks about it all the time. It's called peace through strength. And as history teaches us, the only people who actually deserve peace are those who are willing to wage war to defend it. That's why pacifism is so naive and dangerous.
Wow. When's the last time you heard a defense secretary talk like that? Certainly not Lloyd Austin with his mask and his face shield on. When's the last time you remember a defense secretary talk like this?
Should our enemies choose foolishly to challenge us, they will be crushed by the violence, precision, and ferocity of the War Department. In other words, to our enemies, F-A-F-O. If necessary, our troops can translate that for you. As President Trump has said, and he's right, we have the strongest, most powerful, most lethal, and most prepared military on the planet. That is true, full stop. Nobody can touch us. It's not even close.
Now, before I play this next one, I want you to understand something. I did 4 years in the Marines. I was nothing special, just an average grunt Marine, did my time in Iraq. But because of that time in the Marines, and now because of what I do, I know a lot of veterans. And I'm talking the war fighting type, the trigger pullers, the guys who do not sit on base, the guys who have seen men die, their friends die, the guys who have killed people, the guys who are in these positions we need them to be in. I know lots of them. I count them as friends. We talk all the time. And you can't imagine the things they've said to me in recent years, the disgust they have with watching their pride, their military, watching it be completely destroyed by the Marxists. They're mortified. So many have already gotten out. Not only have they gotten out, they have told me over and over and over again, Jesse, my son will not serve. My daughter will not serve. They will not be serving underneath this disgusting leadership we have now in this country. Those guys, and some of whom are still in, and they write me anonymously, those guys have been dying for leadership that talks, thinks, and acts like them. They've been dying for this.
For too long, we've promoted too many uniformed leaders for the wrong reasons, based on their race, based on gender quotas, based on historic so-called firsts. We became the woke department, but not anymore. No more identity months, DEI offices, dudes in dresses. No more climate change worship. No more division, distraction, or gender delusions. No more debris. As I've said before, and will say again, we are done with that. New War Department golden rule is this: do unto your unit as you would have done unto your own child's unit. Would you want him serving with fat or unfit or undertrained troops? Or alongside people who can't meet basic standards? Or in a unit where standards were lowered so certain types of troops could make it in? In a unit where leaders were promoted for reasons other than merit, performance, and warfighting? The answer is not just no, it's hell no. Frankly, it's tiring to look out at combat formations, or really any formation, and see fat troops. Likewise, it's completely unacceptable to see fat generals and admirals in the halls of the Pentagon and leading commands around the country and the world. It's a bad look. It is bad, and it's not who we are. So whether you're an airborne ranger or a chairborne ranger, a brand new private or a four-star general, you need to meet the height and weight standards and pass your PT test.
Yes. Standards, huh? We talked more about standards.
Today, at my direction, each service will ensure that every requirement for every combat MOS, for every designated combat arms position, returns to the highest male standard only. Because this job is life or death. Standards must be met. And not just met, at every level, we should seek to exceed the standard, to push the envelope, to compete. It's common sense. And core to who we are and what we do, it should be in our DNA. Today, at my direction, we are also adding a combat field test for combat arms units that must be executable in any environment, at any time, and with combat equipment. These tests, they'll look familiar. They'll resemble the Army Expert Physical Fitness Assessment or the Marine Corps Combat Fitness Test. I'm also directing that warfighters in combat jobs execute their service fitness test at a gender-neutral, age-normed male standard scored above 70%. Simply put, if you do not meet the male-level physical standards for combat positions, cannot pass a PT test, or don't want to shave and look professional, it's time for a new position or a new profession.
The male standard. That's offensive. Yeah, not in war, it's not. Men are bigger, stronger, and faster than women. We have forced women into ridiculous combat positions in this military, and it is, and already has, going to get people killed. It gets people killed when you have people who are not physically able to keep up with others. It costs people's lives so you can feel good about feminism. Look at all the women we have. No more. The highest male standard. And what's crazy is how many people in this country think that's crazy. Every military in the history of the world would have acknowledged that's basic stuff. Here in this country, it's been treated all day as controversial. Aren't we supposed to be more understanding? No. But of course, you know why. We talked about it in the open. They have different ideas about what the military should be. He talked about the people who got promoted and the changes of the promotion ladder.
We are liberating commanders and NCOs. We are liberating you. We are overhauling an inspector general process, the IG, that has been weaponized, putting complainers, ideologues, and poor performers in the driver's seat. We're doing the same with the equal opportunity and military equal opportunity policies, the EO and MEO at our department. No more frivolous complaints, no more anonymous complaints, no more repeat complainants, no more smearing reputations, no more endless waiting, no more legal limbo, no more sidetracking careers, no more walking on eggshells. Promote top-performing officers and NCOs faster and get rid of poor performers more quickly. Evaluations, education, and field exercises will become real evaluations, not box checks, for every one of us at every level.
That is exactly what we've been needing. It was an outstanding day. Even if you're not in, even if you can't see it, it's an outstanding day. Now, the work begins, because there's a lot of rot in there that has to be cleaned out. Clearly, they're getting ready to do so. That may have made you uncomfortable, but I don't care. I'm right. So is he. We're going to talk to Julio Rosas, United States Marine, in a moment. Before we do, let me tell you about Pure Top. Let me tell you about My Mobile Company. My Mobile Company did never participate in all the corporate Marxist filth. You know, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, they were more than willing partners when the communists were tearing through our culture. They used your money to tear through our culture. I choose to not reward them for that. I choose to go to Pure Talk. I'm on the same network, so I'm not dropping calls. I'm on the same network. I save a pile of money. I didn't need a new phone. I didn't even want a new phone. I said, can I keep my phone? They said, sure. Keep your phone number. Switch to Pure Talk. It's easy. It'll save you a pile of money, and you can feel better about where you spend it. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Well, today is another Liberation Day. The liberation of America's warriors, in name, in deed, and in authorities. You kill people and break things for a living. You are not politically correct and don't necessarily belong always in polite society. We are not an army of one. We are a joint force of millions of selfless Americans. We are warriors. We are purpose-built, not for fair weather, blue skies, or calm seas. We were built to load up in the back of helicopters, 5 tons, or Zodiacs, in the dead of night, in fair weather or foul, to go to dangerous places, to find those who would do our nation harm, and deliver justice on behalf of the American people in close and brutal combat, if necessary. You are different.
Gosh, it's been so long since anyone talked like that. Joining me now, United States Marine and national correspondent with The Blaze, Julio Rosas. Julio, man, I about came out of my chair watching that thing today.
Yeah, I almost kind of want to go back if I didn't have this illustrious career of going into other crazy situations. But I mean, yeah, that speech, I know some people were saying, oh, it's a waste. Why? This could be done over video conference call. This could be done over a meeting. But Jesse, you know how important formations are, in-person formations are in the military. And it was all this, you know, this spectacle was, there's a reason behind that, right? It's to say, we're going to bring you wherever you're from, where your command is, it could be the other side of the world. We're going to bring you back to DC, to the area, so that you can hear directly from second guy, you know, the guy in charge of the Department of War, you know, close ally of President Trump, that things are different now. Like we're serious and we mean it. And you know, all of the nonsense, all the BS that has been happening for a long time, you know, back in the early 2000s, that's over. And so I think, you know, it was a much needed wake up call to the people above, the high brass, right? And this further exemplifies why, you know, Secretary Hegseth was chosen by President Trump to lead the department, because he understands, as once an enlisted man himself, and you know, he was an officer, not that high of an officer, but an officer nonetheless. And so that's a much needed perspective, especially as a former enlisted man myself.
Julio, how could the brass let it get to the point where they needed a speech like that from the Secretary of War? So many people who were never in and don't really realize it, that they don't understand. They see that general and he's got all these ribbons, Julio, all these ribbons and medals, and he's got the real shiny collar, and surely that means he's a warrior for America and a patriot, right? How could he let this happen?
Well, actually, it's not that all dissimilar from the talking heads, except for you, Jesse, of course, in the media and ground reporters. You know, because when you're on the ground and you see things for yourself, whether it's in a combat situation or in a reporting situation, you have a much different perspective than someone who is in the studio or back at, you know, this office, whether it's in D.C. at the Pentagon or some, you know, high command that's in Europe or, you know, Tampa, for example. So It's inevitable. It's inevitable that you're going to lose some perspective, and that's why you got to have. That's why they have senior enlisted advisors, right? So, but even then, that's still a high ranking position. And so, I think the reason why is just because they let it get to that point is just because it's just the politics. And yeah, people don't really understand unless you've been in the military and you've seen it that once you get to, you know, the 2, 3, 4 stars, things get very, very political very, very quickly because, you know, if you don't support certain things, if you don't get along with the blob, you know, the swamp of DC and the industry that supports it, you're not going to get anywhere. And you're not going to get that 3rd or 4th star. You know, you're not going to get that high command that you might have been wanting since you were a cadet at West Point or something. So it's just the unfortunate, you know, hubris that we've had because, yeah, our track record from these, you know, from the war on terror is, you know, unfortunately, it's atrocious. Not necessarily, you know, it's not because of the ground guys. You know, they obviously did their part. Jesse, you did your part. But it's the high-ranking people that make those tough decisions, and they get when they get clouded or they get distracted with all this nonsense of like, oh, we got to have DEI hires in our human resources department, as opposed to like, what's that going to actually like win battles and win wars? People are going to suffer, and I think, for example, you know how we ended the war in Afghanistan was the culmination of all that. I mean, that was decades of mismanagement and just total misdirection and mistrust towards the American people, but they couldn't hide that. You know, they couldn't hide how you know us leaving that country in such a dishonorable way.
Speaking of DEI hires, here was Dick Levine.
Hello, I'm Admiral Rachel Levine. Climate change is having a disproportionate effect on the physical and mental health of Black communities. Black Americans are more likely than white Americans to live in areas and housing that increase their susceptibility to climate-related health issues. And 65% of Black Americans report feeling anxious about climate change's impact. Through our Office of Climate Change and Health Equity and the Office of Environmental Justice, we're working with providers and community leaders to identify innovative approaches that empower communities to address the health consequences linked to climate change.
Julio, how much of that is still left in the military? Because it seems to me like Pete Hegseth has a lot of cleaning up to do.
I would say there's still a big chunk. And we saw that, unfortunately, in the aftermath of Charlie Kirk being killed. There were a lot of uniformed personnel on their social media pages that are often were times supported by their command, saying the most horrific thing about Charlie and lying about him and what he stood for. But I remember during the early days of you know the Trump administration in the first term, I had to sign an understanding. I had signed an agreement with through the DOD on social media use and that whatever I posted had to be professional. It had to reflect good on the service and the department. And these people who have the preferred political leanings and activism that the blob, you know, the DC blob has, they've been super political. They've been super just unhinged prior to Charlie being killed, but people didn't really understand it until, you know, other people were looking for, you know, who was saying what about Charlie. So there is this capture that is deeply embedded within the Department of War. This is just the first step to try to get that culture to change and get back to the basics, which is concerning because it's like, well, why haven't you guys been focused on this to begin with? Like you're dealing with life and death situations with the security of not just the country, but in many cases of the world. And really, we've only been getting along just through the inertia that we've had for, you know, since the post World War II period and Vietnam and all that. You know, this isn't Desert Storm anymore. I mean, this is just brave new world stuff that requires serious people. And I think that the Trump administration is doing a good job to get it just back to the basics.
Final one from me. Trump spoke about fighting the cartels today to all these guys. Here's what he said.
Together with the leaders here today, we're also restoring a needed focus on defeating threats in the Western Hemisphere. Throughout this region, cartel terrorists have been allowed to wage a relentless campaign of death and destruction on our country, all because we had weak leadership on top. And we did a great job with it first term, but this is something else what we're doing now. We're taking it to the next level, probably next level times three.
Julio, what does that mean?
Again, it means that things are different now, that we are going to be taken seriously, and that's why they're drone striking smuggling boats from Venezuela, because we were absolutely taken advantage of during the past 4 years. The fact that the drug cartels were able to make more money dealing with human smuggling and human trafficking than drugs during that period is insane. And they did that because they know that they were able to make more money because that was guaranteed. There was no significant loss of quote-unquote product. And so now that we have, again, serious leadership to safeguard the homeland, this is what it means. And Jesse, we've talked about this before, where I'm not exactly sure if it means we're going to, do full invasion of South America, but something has to change. And that's why Trump was elected, because the status quo, especially within, the Department of, the former Department of Defense, it was a total joke. It was a total joke. Everyone saw it. Everyone knew it. But because, again, it is of this going along to get along attitude within the halls of the Pentagon, no one wanted to do anything because it risks their career. And so, again, I think this speech was much needed. It was very refreshing. I was very motivated with it. And I've been out for over 4 years now. So if I were in, I'd be very happy. I'll just put it that way. I'd be very happy if I was still in.
No doubt. Julio, thank you, boss. Appreciate it. All right. Before we go talk to Senator Johnson about the shutdown, I want to talk to you about how garbage your olive oil is. It's a hard talk. It's just you and me. We have to talk about it. That bottle of olive oil I know you have sitting over by your stove, you're probably looking at it right now. I hope you feel guilty because it's bland and it's crappy and it's not your fault. It's old. We don't realize that we buy old olive oil and we think that we don't have options. We all get it at the grocery store. I always did. You go to the olive oil aisle, what is it, once a year when you run out? And you go grab a bottle. All this looks like it comes from Italy. We all do the same thing. Stop doing that. Get olive oil fresh from the farm and you're going to taste an amazing difference. Farmfresh246.com gets you fresh from the farm. You don't have to take my word for it. They'll send you a bottle, $39 bottle for a dollar. Help cover the shipping. Then you'll see. Farmfresh246.com. We'll be back. All right, what's this shutdown stuff all about? Should I be as excited as I am about the government no longer being open? Let's ask somebody who will tell it right, he'll give it to us straight. Senator Ron Johnson from the state of Wisconsin. Senator, why should I be upset if the government shuts down? I know you have to pretend to be upset, but why should I be mad?
I don't have to pretend. Wouldn't hurt my feelings. I just offer the Bill Eliminate Shutdowns Act. And every Democrat voted against it. And unfortunately, 12 Republican appropriators voted against it as well. So, go figure. But no, the vast majority of government is deemed essential. Government thinks quite a bit of itself, so it's deemed essential. It'll remain open. The part that closes, those government employees will go off to the spas and take vacations. They'll eventually get paid. Again, it's one great big charade. We know how this ends. They're going to, give CRs up against some holiday. Right before the holiday, once the appropriators get all their their 2,000-page bill's done, it'll be dropped on our desks, and we'll have less than 24 hours to pretend to read it and then vote yes or no. I generally vote no. But that's the game that's been played. I've been here for 15 years, Jesse. In that time, we should have passed 180 appropriation bills before the start of the next fiscal year, right? 180. You know how many we've passed? Six. We passed six on time. That's a 96.7% failure rate. And yet the appropriators who opposed my bill said this bill would undercut the appropriation process. What? So maybe we would have only passed four or five of those things had the prevent or the eliminate shutdown act been in place. No, it's a very sad joke. It's again, to the outside, it looks dysfunctional. No, this is a very well-honed process by the Uniparty to create these fiscal cliffs, get the American public all spent up about the disaster that the government shutdown is, so that they can write and then unravel and present these multi-thousand page omnibus spending bills that there are always Democrats will vote for it, and they can always assemble what I always call the McConnell coalition of just enough Republicans to join Democrats in passing their priorities. And let's hope and pray that President Trump doesn't relent now on their latest gambit. You know, Democrats opening salvo here. The House passed a relatively clean CR. Again, backed up against the Thanksgiving holiday. And I don't like that because that's setting up the process. But the Democrats' counter to that was, well, we'll give you a four-week CR, and all we're asking for is another $1.5 trillion worth of spending and unravel all the things you did in the One Big Beautiful Bill. I mean, that's an obviously unserious offer. My concern is what they really want is what they could have done easily when they had control under Biden. They want permanence for the temporary pandemic-enhanced Obamacare subsidies. And they want that because Obamacare itself has dramatically increased the cost of health insurance on individual exchange, and those enhanced subsidies basically took a lot of people, millions of people, that were getting subsidies, but they also had to chip into those insurance plans. Don't chip in anymore. The result is you've got unscrupulous agents and brokers who are literally selling policies to people that don't even know they're getting them. They're collecting a commission. The insurance companies are collecting the premiums. Billions of dollars of taxpayer money going into policies that aren't being used, that the people that the policies are written for don't even know they have them. If any Republican, including the president, supports extending that fraud, that's what they're doing. They're extending those subsidies. They're perpetuating that massive fraud.
Do you get the sense from the White House that the president is with us on this? As many good things as Trump has done, he's frankly disastrous when it comes to spending items. Is he with us this time?
Well, I know a lot of the political advisors are scared, you know whatless, of being accused of taking health care away from women and children. You know, that's why we didn't end the fraud of the 9-to-1 match under the Obamacare expansion of Medicaid. We couldn't touch that. They already did too much to Medicaid. And yeah, I'm afraid they are afraid of the demagoguery coming from the Democrats, backed up by the media. And listen, it's a legitimate concern. You know how affected the demagogues, the liars are on the left, and how they're supported by the media. So it's not an illegitimate concern from a standpoint if you want to win the House. But no, I am concerned.
Handicap it for us. How long's the shutdown last?
I really don't know. Listen, if it's just solely up to Democrats who are going to be pretty relentless because they know the media will back them up, it could last quite some time. It all depends on how soon Republicans might cave. It's just that simple. If it's only up to me, I would continue to bring up the Eliminate Shutdowns Act, which just creates 14-day rolling continuing appropriations. You know, shut down government, you just fund at last year's levels. And then try and figure out areas of agreement, you know, like Veterans Affairs or defense. I mean, there are plenty of areas where appropriators and a lot of members will actually agree and pass those one at a time, you know, without all this shutdown threat. But again, the shutdown threat is all about spending a lot more money than what you could actually pass if you did individual appropriation bills. You know, do it right before Christmas with a 2,000-page bill. That's the game that's been played ever since I arrived here in 2011.
Figures. Senator, thank you, sir. I appreciate it. That poor guy. We need to send him some massa chips. That's what he needs. He's been there 15 years. You can tell how frustrated he is. He needs a box of massa chips. You know what? I'm going to get a hold of massa chips. And I know what you're thinking. Ron Johnson is famously a guy who cares about his health. I'm going to have a salad today. Well, massa chips they're good. These aren't these store brand chips that have 8,000 cancer-causing piles of filth in there. You know what's in massa chips? It's three ingredients. Three. My wife, the health freak, eats Massa Chips, and they're amazing. Several different flavors, corn chips, potato chips. It's the one chip I can eat where I'm not going to get the evil eye from her. Are you going to eat the whole bag? Yes. Yes, I am. I'm going to sit here and I'm going to dab hot sauce on it. And I'm going to eat the whole bag and I'm not going to feel bad about it. Trust me. You get one bag of Massa Chips. Try a potato or two. Try a tortilla or two. You'll never go back. MassaChips.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
I have nothing to apologize for. It is a tragedy that Charlie Kirk was killed in that way. I feel for his widow and his children. They will have to live with that for the rest of their lives. But there is no legacy to honor. It was a legacy filled with bigotry, hatred, and white supremacy. Mm-hmm. And as a Black woman and as a Muslim in this country, I refuse to join the chorus that changes the history of what is on the record from this man. But I am not going to be bullied into complacency, into dishonoring who I am and what I stand for just to, you know, make them feel comfortable.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
What a nasty witch. He was one of the nicest human beings I ever met in my life. And listen, witch, that's exactly why you're going to end up with somebody like me. Joining me now, Monica Page, White House correspondent, also Turning Point USA. Just a nasty hag. And this has been unbelievably common since Charlie Kirk was murdered. These people pretending like he's some barbarian. It's wild to me.
Yeah, Jesse, she's a disgusting woman. And it really hurts my heart to hear Democrats, specifically those like Ilhan Omar and many of those anti-American Democrats who aren't even from our country to begin with, who are saying these despicable things, and they don't even know the amazing things that Charlie Kirk did. He bridged a gap between Republicans and Democrats in a way that nobody else could. He touched the hearts and the minds of college students. That's not an easy thing to do. And every single day, I feel like I'm reminded of the amazing work that he's done. He's pushed me personally to become not only a better person, but also a better reporter. He's pushed me in ways that I don't think I would have ever been pushed if I worked for anybody else. So it's going to be a really tough road moving forward, but it is a job that we are so excited to do and carry on. And we just cannot listen to people like Ilhan Omar. We can't listen to people like Don Lemon. We have to keep ignoring that noise and we need to keep pushing forward. We have work to do, that's for sure.
She mentioned what she stands for, against what she stands for, but she did not elaborate. It's funny how often communists do that. What does she stand for, Monica?
I have no idea what she stands for. I think she stands for anybody else other than the American people. And I'm baffled every single day as to how she's even in our country doing what she's doing. I mean, this is a woman who's actually married to a white man, but also married to her brother still. This is somebody who doesn't have any sort of morals or values that benefit the American people. And quite honestly, I think that she and other radical leftists are the best thing for the Republican Party. I mean, President Trump said it best. People like her, people like Zohran Mamdani are gifts to the Republican Party. And we should probably just let people like her just keep talking, because it's better for us the more that she speaks.
Yeah, maybe I should get her on the show. Somehow I don't think she'll accept that invitation. You mentioned Don Lemon, and you mentioned being married to a white man, and so that seems oddly appropriate. He came out and said this.
White men, something is broken. Something is cracked deep inside when so many of you believe the answer to fear, to loss, to change is violence. Wake up, white men. What the fuck is wrong with you? But you're too dumb to even realize that, because you're lazy and sitting in front of a computer or a phone and you're just eating it up. Oh, my God. Look at what they're doing. All of a sudden, my heritage is going to be over. That I won't. I want to live in a country where there white kids go to white schools and white people marry each other. What is wrong with that? I want to grow up in the country that my great-grandfather grew up in. That country doesn't exist anymore, asshole.
Well, I think he said a lot right there, Monica.
Yeah, he said a lot. And Jesse, honestly, I think you owe everybody an apology for being a white man. You are the enemy. It is your problem and it's your fault why we are here in this spot. I think it's hysterical that Don Lemon won't call out that it's 6% of the population that commits half the crimes in our country. And Charlie Kirk was very vocal in the crime in our country and who's behind it all. And I am old enough to remember when Don Lemon spoke about the problems that the Black community were facing. He actually spoke about, what was it? I think it was the top five ways to fix the African-American community. And the number one thing was fatherlessness. And the fact that he's completely flip-flopped on this and made it about white people was adding to the division in our country. You should be ashamed of yourself. He's married to a white man. So is Ilhan Omar. The hypocrisy is on new levels that I didn't even think could be even reached. And to his point, saying, oh, white people want to be surrounding themselves with other white people, they want to send their kids to white schools, they themselves have self-segregated. They want to live in Black communities. They want to send their children to Black schools specifically. They want to marry within their own culture. And so what if white people want the same? That doesn't make us racist. That just makes us wanting to be with our own people. They do the exact same thing, Jesse.
Yeah, it's funny how people act when that shoe gets on the other foot. Okay, let's shift gears here because Israel-Gaza is something that's been going on for years, and I see all the poll numbers on this. This is an issue that most Americans have kind of checked out of. I realize there are people who care a lot this way or that way, but most Americans are kind of checked out on it. Donald Trump wants it to end, wants this thing wrapped up so he can move on. Are we close to getting that done?
I wish we were, Jesse, because this plan, this new plan that was just unveiled this week has really proved to be phenomenal. He wants to create a peace board where, you know, you have a specific governing force in the Gazan region to at least try to maintain peace, because you really can't have a strictly Palestinian state. We see what happens when something like that happens. I'm very curious to see what happens, because Israel apparently agreed to this deal. They're just waiting on Hamas, but unfortunately, I don't think a force like Hamas will agree with something like this, because they just strictly just don't care for peace. And you know, President Trump gave Israel his blessing in saying, listen, if Hamas doesn't want to agree to this, you have my full approval to do what you need to do to keep eradicating this problem in the Middle East. You know, you say a lot of people are kind of tired of this. I'm one of them. I have serious war fatigue between Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Hamas. I'm pretty sick of it, and I'd like to see an end to this. But a lot of this is very dependent on Hamas, and only time will tell if this is going to be, again, something that can be fixed. But we don't know.
Monica, I don't sit here and pretend that either of us can crawl inside the mind of a jihadi like Hamas, and nor do I really care to, but they can't continue. Physically, their military strength, from what I understand from my sources, is just evaporated. I don't care how committed of a Jew-hating jihadi you are. If you're out of guns and you're out of men, the war is over. What's the plan?
Right. I mean, that's exactly the question that I think is on everybody's minds. And I think that's the question that this administration is currently facing. Because, you know, when you keep stealing the aid, when you keep, you know, using human shields in the region, you know, there's no peace can ever be done. You're not going to release the hostages, both dead and alive. You can't reach that next level of peace in the region. And I think a lot of this is very much up in the air, unfortunately, because no matter how many deals you keep trying to make, I don't know if you can even make a deal with terrorism. You can't make a deal with terrorists at the end of the day. So I wish I had a solution. I wish this administration can come to a conclusion, but it's got to be a both sides want to end this war. And clearly one side doesn't.
Yeah. All right. Shifting gears here. Trump came out, and the pharmaceutical industry is all hot on everybody's minds. We're all tired of paying what we pay, and we think they're a bunch of corrupt scumbags. This is what Trump said.
Pfizer has agreed to offer countless prescription medications at major discounts in the United States as a result of the most favored nation drug pricing order that we established earlier this year. As you know, the United States is paying sometimes 10 times more than other countries for drugs, and a lot of excuses were made for that, but it went on for many years, many, many years, decades, and it's not going on any longer. We're going to be paying the lowest price now. We're going to be
paying whatever the lowest prices. Favored nations. This will save American taxpayers and consumers hundreds of millions of dollars.
Monica, what's going on here? What is this?
Well, this is clearly President Trump completely reinventing the pharmaceutical manufacturing companies and the entire pharmaceutical industry. This new investment from Pfizer, I believe, is $70 billion, which is, you know, strictly going to lower the cost. It's going to bring this manufacturing and producing back to America and essentially have Americans save more money when they need their medications. We're going to be paying what other countries have been paying. And we also know that the president has also, he just announced a new Trump RX government website where you can literally buy your medications through this new website, completely cutting out the middleman, which is also fantastic. So the president is taking a new approach to the way things have been done for decades. I think this is a great approach for those that need it. I think that this is a way that many people will have an easier time to getting their medications. I know over the last 4 years, a lot of people had some difficulty under the Biden administration, and I'm very excited and positive to see the president take this new approach.
Is it still cool working at the White House, or is kind of the bloom gotten off the rose?
It's still really cool. I mean, you just never know what's going to happen, Jesse. The president could be on the roof one day. He could be on the North Lawn another day. He could be coming out from the Oval Office on any other day. He could randomly call us into the Oval Office for a big announcement. So you truly never know what's going to happen. I will say, under the last administration, the year and a half that I was working under the Biden administration here at the White House, it was a snooze fest. It was very quiet. Nothing was happening. A lid would be called at 2 p.m. The day would start at 11 a.m. That's just what it was. So that part got old. But now when you just never know what's going to happen, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's hard to believe Joe Biden would run a sleepy White House. Monica, thank you. Come back soon. I appreciate you. Lighten the mood. Next. I'm going to miss Trump when he's gone. Specifically, even though sometimes it makes me cringe like it makes you cringe, I'm going to miss him trolling Democrats on social media. Donald Trump, the president of the United States of America, put this on social media.
Look, guys, there's no way to sugarcoat it. Nobody likes Democrats anymore. We have no voters left because of all of our woke trans bullshit. Not even black people want to vote for us anymore. Even Latinos hate us. So we need new voters. And if we give all these illegal aliens free health care, we might be able to get them on our side so they can vote for us. They can't even speak English, so they won't realize we're just a bunch of woke pieces of shit, you know, at least for a while, until they learn English and they realize they hate us too.
And then Hakeem Jeffries tried to be mad.
Mr. President, the next time you have something to say about me, don't cop out through a racist and fake AI video. When I'm back in the Oval Office, say it to my face. Say it to my face.
I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.